The reality is that we have gone through many hype cycles. I believe that AI is going to change many things, and I think that we are already seeing the results of that.
It's a very pragmatic language. I like the fact that it feels more like designed by actual developers than language architects, in the sense of, like, you look at the problem, like, what is the most pragmatic solution to that kind of programming problem?
So if you're doing web development, especially if you're using JetBrains Toolbox, then it's really, you don't have to think about the IDE, you just have to think about the project. Like, even today, when you install JetBrains Toolbox, you can open things by projects, not by IDEs.
Is there anything that is not supported yet in terms of, I think there's no Rust IDE, is it?
Yes, there is Rust Rover. Rust Rover is our Rust IDE. Actually, Rust we supported in in C++, in our C-Line IDE, which is the C++ as a plugin. Then we supported it also in IntelliJ IDEA. And then we created a dedicated plugin, a dedicated IDE for Rust, which is called Rust Rover.
You're listening to SimplyBlocks Cloud Commute Podcast, your weekly 20-minute podcast about cloud technologies, Kubernetes, security, sustainability, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of SimplyBlocks Cloud Commute Podcast. Today, you know the spiel. I have another incredible guest. I know this every time, and it's true every single time. This time, it is, again, a very different topic. Because we normally, when we talk about, like, or when we have guests here, we talk about like tools right in production. But this time I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about the development side of things. So Ahari, welcome. Thank you for being here, and maybe just give us a quick introduction to yourself.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Chris. It's been a long time since we've seen each other as well. So my name is Hadi. I work at JetBrains. I've been working here for the past 15 years. I started as a developer advocate for our .NET line of tools, and then moved into JavaScript, and then moved to Kotlin, and somehow absorbed Java along the way. And until this year, I was leading the developer advocacy team. Now I'm currently the department lead for the open source projects at JetBrains that we have, which include Kotlin and KTOR and some of the other stuff, and also doing some kind of what we call program management, which is cross-department initiatives to span multiple products and
right.
Departments.
So I think most people are probably familiar with JetBrains, but maybe just say a few words about the company itself, just in case that there's the one person that has never heard about JetBrains so far.
Oh, I really hope there's more than one person that hasn't heard about JetBrains, because otherwise, you know, we're going to shrink our customer base pretty quickly.
Right? I don't know about that. I mean, you can have heard about that, but they're still Eclipse losers or whatever.
Yeah. So JetBrains, we do a bunch of things. We create IDEs. So you might have heard of IntelliJ, PyCharm, WebStorm, Rust Rover, Rider for .NET. We do tools for .NET, which is like ReSharper. We do now, obviously everyone does, we do JetBrains AI, which is showcasing itself in our AI assistance in our tools. And of course, we also do the Kotlin programming language, which is now has become the standard programming language for Android development as well. And yes, it's JetBrains that does Kotlin, not Google. Although people still think the others. Otherwise,
interesting.
Anyway.
I was aware of that. I always assumed everyone understands it was JetBrains creating Kotlin, because that was how it was initially announced also at Google I/O. I remember that.
It was, yeah. But, you know, if you're there, you hear it. But then as you start to use it, and if you go, for example, to you know, Google developer.android.com, and you start to see so much resources on on Kotlin and everything. Kotlin, some people
get confused about that. Yeah, that makes sense. I think for me, because I was always more on the backend side, I never really got deep into the whole Android ecosystem. So that's probably why. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Exactly, exactly. And also, that's the other thing. Like, people actually believe that Kotlin was made for Android development, and it's not. It's made for, you know, we started it as a server-side tool, right? We started it as a language for creating our own products, writing our own products in Kotlin, and we don't do mobile development. But yeah, that's how fake news happens, you know what I'm saying?
That's fair. I think there is like, what is it? There's a JavaScript backend. I think there's a native backend. There's the JVM backend, which was the initial one. Then there is... Did I miss?
Yeah, that? There's a JVM backend. Then we have a JavaScript backend, which is kind of like staying at the stage it is, more or less. We're just mostly maintaining that one. And then we have the native backend, which gives you ability to access, create executables for Windows, Linux, and iOS and macOS, and some other targets. And then we also have been working on WebAssembly support.
So in any case, if you're looking for a really cool modern language that basically targets everything, Kotlin is the way to go. That was always my take on that. It's a very pragmatic language. I like the fact that it feels more like designed by actual developers than language architects, in the sense of, like, you look at the problem, like, what is the most pragmatic solution to that kind of programming problem, which is very different from something like Scala or stuff, which seems very artificial and very, like, theoretical. Sorry, Scala folks, if you're still around, I mean, the language doesn't do great anymore, I think. Anyway, we're a cloud podcast. We're not talking about program languages. Except for one specific question, like, what is your take, or how do you see the future, especially in the sense of cloud for different programming languages, like JavaScript, Go, Python, Java, Rust?
Okay, you're going to have to forgive my ignorance. So I'm going to come back with a question to you. When we're talking about cloud development, what are we talking about in particular?
That is a very good question. That is a very good question. So from the scope of the podcast, I think it's mostly around anything you would run on Kubernetes, which is often microservices, but doesn't have to, right? Like databases, all kinds of stuff. But there is still people going back to like virtual machine-based deployments.
I think there, really, realistically, I think the language probably doesn't matter much, right? It's more around the platforms and what support they provide you with what you need for deploying your applications and making your applications run. I mean, if you take a look at, for example, microservices, inherently, if they're to be done in a way that they should be, and note that I don't say how they should be done. I'm just saying if they should be done in the way they should be done, they need to work in a somewhat disconnected manner, right? And part of the beauty of that is that I can now have different languages and different services running that are talking to each other with a common protocol. And it doesn't matter what's running under the covers. Obviously, there are... So now it turns more into where the focus of the cloud providers are and the service providers are and what languages are they supporting. I think the majority of them are probably supporting JavaScript because, well, they, you know, it's the most popular language. Then there was I haven't been keeping up with this, but I don't know what's happened with serverless, whether serverless is still a thing or it's not a thing, or it's like, you know, it's still a thing, right? So there, again, you talk about, you know, which languages are supporting serverless technologies. We support it, obviously, with Kotlin. Then I know that, for example, some of the big cloud providers support it if you're using JVM-backed languages. So I'm not sure that the language itself is, like, the only way that I would look at it is, okay, I want to use these services from these cloud providers. This is what I need. what languages do they support? And I think that the cloud providers are kind of like looking at us and saying, okay, so what's the next big thing that people want? And should we start supporting that? So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point, you know, if probably already Rust is picking up on that side of things as well, right? Yeah, because why? Because people are liking Rust, so let's start providing Rust.
I like the very pragmatic answer. You're right at spot at JetBrains, I guess. that is a good point because, I mean, at least I think that is how JetBrains started. It was all around IntelliJ. And then IntelliJ being the Java IDE, then there was the IntelliJ platform, which became basically the base for most of the other IDEs. Is there anything that is not supported yet in terms of, I think there's no Rust IDE, is it?
Yes, there is Rust Rover. Rust Rover is our Rust IDE. Actually, Rust we supported in in C++, in our C-Line IDE, which is the C++ as a plugin. Then we supported it also in IntelliJ IDE. Then we created a dedicated plugin, a dedicated IDE for Rust.
I wasn't aware of that. I mean, due to being a Java champion, I have access to all of the tools, but I'm already using way too many languages, so I haven't gone deep into Rust. But before I became Java champion, I was a happy paying customer of the whole lineup because I actually use like pretty much daily like WebStorm, unfortunately PHP Storm, Goland, which from my perspective is like the best Go IDE ever. IntelliJ obviously for Kotlin and Java. Sometimes PyCharm. And what one thing I really like about the IDEs is that they still feel very much the same thing over and over again. Whereas with other things, you have to switch. Well, you have Visual Studio Code, but personally, I would say they're like Visual Studio Code and maybe the JetBrains IDEs.
Regarding the whole being a paying customer, I mean, let me know who I can talk to get rid of your Java champion status so that you can return to being a paying customer.
No, but seriously, I was a happy paying customer. And when I figured out that as a Java champion, I could actually get the IDEs for free, that was awesome. But I would have stayed like a paying customer anyways.
Taken the opposite approach here, right? Whereas VS Code, for example, is an IDE where you basically can use it for any kind of language, taking into account that you have to add the plugins and the different functionalities that you want, we try and provide a more catered experience out of the box. So if you're doing web development, you know, and especially if you're using JetBrains Toolbox, then it's really, you don't have to think about the IDE, you just have to think about the project. Like even today, when you install JetBrains Toolbox, you can open things by projects, not by IDEs, right? So it says, oh, okay, so you're opening a web project. Okay, so then probably you're going to be using WebStorm for this. But the feel of the IDE, the shortcuts, everything is exactly the same. It's just catered towards that specific use case scenario.
Yeah, and many of the IDEs have like plugins for other languages, which are commonly happen to be around like PHP, Storm supports HTML and JavaScript because that's what you normally do when you do PHP website.
Exactly. So they're supersets. Like for example, you know, exactly as you said, PHP Storm supports all of those languages. PyCharm the same. PyCharm, if you're using professional version, it's not just Python, right? It's Django, it's all of the web stuff. And if you're supporting Django, obviously you're going to support front end stuff. You're going to support JavaScript, HTML, CSS, all of these things. Yeah.
The other side is that JetBrains also are like for I don't know like probably around 10 years or so started to do more of the production tools after development like CI/CD, I don't know what else, right? There is a lot.
Well, I mean, TeamCity, which is our CI/CD software, has been around for I think about 20 years or 18 years. Yeah. This came about at the time of cruise control. I don't know if you remember cruise control. It was a solution by ThoughtWorks, which was based on XML configuration, and it was just a command line tool, right? That would run. And TeamCity came as a result of that. Like, you know, there surely should be a better way for us to do something like this. TeamCity is now alternatives to TeamCity are, for example, Jenkins, which was Hudson at some point, right? So yeah, TeamCity has been around for a long time and we cover CICDs. We've just launched a new kind of flavor of TeamCity, which is called Pipelines, which is very easier streamlined solution. That is like, if you just want to get up and running with an ID, with a project immediately, getting it to build, you do that. Because like, here's the situation with TeamCity. TeamCity came as a response to us wanting to just build things in a much easier way, right? And at the time, as I said, there was cruise control. It wasn't very intuitive. And so, but then as TeamCity grew, as our needs grew, as our customers' needs grew, TeamCity started to take on more complexity. And now it's a, you know, significantly complex product that can, you know, serve hundreds of even thousands of agents, which are the machines that are doing the building of your product, and coordinating and orchestrating all of this and connecting to so many different types of services and endpoints, etc. And yet, despite that, we've tried to still keep a clean user interface, right? But TeamCity right now is at a level that probably, you know, larger customers and enterprises are using very effectively. And so we, you know, took a step back and said, okay, well, if we go back to our roots, and while anyone can still use TeamCity today for a simple setup, you know, equivalent to what you would call, for example, GitHub Actions, sometimes people feel overwhelmed with what they're presented. And so TeamCity Pipelines is basically that rethinking of how we can leverage everything that we've learned and bring that simple experience again to
right, and then there is I think that goes a little bit more back to development. Then you also have tools like Space and Fleet.
We did. We sunset Space. Yeah. Space is sunset. Yes. Space was an attempt for us to try and move in a direction where we could provide an all-in-one solution for software shops, right? So if you take a look at GitLab and you take a look at GitHub, they have their series of functionalities, right? But then people needed Slack. Then people needed a directory for you know, their employees. And then they needed something else. And we thought, okay, well, this is a problem that we have at JetBrains. Can we try and create some kind of all-in-one solution? To be quite honest with you, I personally didn't really believe strongly in the idea because I've been around for a long time and I know that all-in-one solutions often are not just, they don't do everything great, but also it's hard to sell. To be quite honest, like it's hard to come to it, especially, you know, Space for where it really starts to show value with like employee directory and all of these other things are companies that are, you know, 200, 300, 500 people. When you get to that scale, someone's like, you're not touching my ERP system, or you're not taking out Jira, or you're not taking out this, or you're not taking out that. You know, it's a very hard sell to say to a company, take everything you've got, replace it with this. Even though longer term, you may even be happier, less maintenance, less software upgrades, etc. It's a very hard sell. And then if you go down the route of, well, we're trying to provide an all-in-one solution, but also let's provide integration with points with everything else, then it kind of says, then what's the point?
To be honest, I've never used it, but it's, I guess, kind of similar to GitHub Spaces from the idea?
No, that's a different thing. Fleet is basically our attempt to go the alternative route, which is provide a single ID experience independently of what you're doing. And to be honest with you, IntelliJ IDEA is that single ID. Like IntelliJ IDEA has always been polyglot. But Fleet is that attempt. Fleet also tries to take a new approach to some of the ways that we work. It's a different approach to how we usually do IDEs. It starts off as an editor, so you can just launch Fleet as an editor. Then it's got an option to enable it as an IDE, so you get all of the smartness without having to configure tons of plugins. But it's polyglot from the ground up. And in fact, the KMP tooling, Kotlin multi-platform tooling, which is Kotlin multi-platform, is the ability to write Kotlin code and target many platforms, iOS, macOS, Android, all of these. We're building some of that tooling on the Fleet platform.
I always assumed it's going to be an online editor, basically running my web browser or something.
No, it's a standalone client right now.
Okay, interesting. And then there is like a lot of the tools have free versions and commercial versions.
So we have there's two tools that have community editions, which we call them. There's PyCharm Community Edition, which is a cut down version of PyCharm Professional. And then there's IntelliJ IDEA Community Edition, which is the cut down version of IntelliJ IDEA Ultimate. Both of these are open source platforms, and we've built on, and Android Studio is built on that, as is, for example, DevEco, which is the development environment for Harmony OS and products such as that. Outside of that, then we have, we've started to offer with some of our products, such as Rust Rover, the ability to have, so you've always had the ability to get a free license from JetBrains, right? Whether it was under the open source license, you're working on open source for a nonprofit, it's a hobby, you can get an open source license. Students get free licenses. So there was different manners in which you can get free licenses. In addition, now with Rust Rover, we've actually launched a non-commercial license. So that means that if you're using Rust for non-commercial purposes where you're not getting direct revenue from or indirect revenue from, then you can use the product for free. So yeah.
I think I told you once that I really loved your very specific talk, There Is No Silver Bullet. And I think it sounds a little bit like would you just explained about JetBrain Spaces, like a one thing that tries to do all is not easy. But in this case, it was I think it was more about the general changes that we've done. We went from SOAP to microservices to I don't know what else. And every single time, it's like this thing will solve all of our issues and. We figured it does not. Is that still something you believe today?
Well, yeah, I still don't think that everything's going to solve our issues. I mean, even AI,
what?
I don't think it's going to solve all our issues. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
give it another year or two and people will figure out not every single tool needs an AI assistant.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the time when every tool was an email client as well. I don't know if you remember back then. Like, it's like, oh, you're creating an app. Well, if it doesn't have an email support, it's not an app, right? I mean, look, the reality is that, you know, we have gone through many hype cycles. I believe that AI is going to change many things. And I think that we are already seeing the results of that. But there's also a significant hype associated to it, but that doesn't mean that it's all hype. Like, I don't see that we'll completely move off of AI like we've moved off of some other things. But like with any new technology or any new thing, you know, there's that excitement, everyone's trying out everything, and then it kind of like cools down, and then the dust settles and we start to see, okay, where and how is this actually useful, and where and how is it not that useful? Yeah. I mean, even with our IDEs right now, you know, people are using AI. They're using, you know, our assistants. They may be using third-party assistants, etc. But here's one of the challenges that I've you know, been thinking about. Right. Right now, yourself, me, many of us have spent a significant amount of time of our lives writing code and learning software development. And yes, we have also gone to Stack Overflow and other places, and we have copied and pasted code, right? And to an effect, you know, what the chat assistants right now and what the AI assistants are doing now right now is not that much different, right? They're just, the answer doesn't need to necessarily exist for them to deduce it. And so when we've pasted that code, something still in us has made us look at it and see, okay, well, this looks more or less okay. And as we've created code over the years, we've had seniors to look up to, and seniors that hopefully have been doing peer reviews and code reviews and checking things. Okay. And all of this comes from experience that we have curated by spending a significant amount of time dealing with bugs, writing code, practicing, testing, etc. We've learned. And what I'm thinking is, as we move more towards an era where more and more people, I'm not necessarily saying software developers, but I'm saying people can end up in a situation where they're writing code and generating code from the AI assistants, who's going to be looking out for them? And who's going to be looking out for the code that these are generating? And who's going to be mentoring those people, right? So like, if we're not careful, in a sense, a generation of, like, the generations of software developers may potentially be lost. And that might be okay. I don't know. But as we move towards more and more juniors just spitting out code with assistance, you're already seeing the results. You're already seeing so many security vulnerabilities. You're already seeing so many issues in the code. And some of this code isn't even being run for a longer period of time. And here's the other thing. We're not even sure the results of what happens. Yeah, we hear a lot about tools creating an entire application. We don't know what happens when they put it into production.
Right, exactly. I'm completely with you on that one. For the sake of time, I try to keep it short. Used ChatGPT just for fun. Generated a Quarkus application, doing some database stuff, and it generated a database query with string concatenation, taking in dates as a string. But in the same answer, it told me about being careful about SQL injection. I was like, great, perfect, thank you very much. Right. Right. As I said, for the sake of time, because we're on this topic anyways, what do you see as the next big thing? Maybe after AI.
What do I see as the next big thing? Oh, man, I don't know. If I did, I wouldn't be standing right, here with you, would I? I would be.
That's, I would again, be doing a very pragmatic answer. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea what the next big thing is. I mean, I think that the next big thing is going to continue in the realms of AI if we don't manage to blow ourselves up as a society with all of the conflicts and everything else going on. I'm guessing that we're going to continue in this realm. I'm probably thinking that we might move more in other areas such as infrastructure, such as DevOps, trying to incorporate some of this functionality and make things easier for people to develop and not just develop but deploy software.
All right. Cool. So, yeah. Ben, last question. Is there anything else you want the audience to know?
That's a very, very broad question. Scope it down. Yes. It's like you're giving me a platform to say anything that I could potentially think of what I could say. And I would say, have you tried the new chocolate donut? No. I just say, look, embrace, but always be, always remain, what's the word? What's the word that I'm looking for? It's kind of like not cautious, but vigilant. You know, think about things for yourself. And this is, doesn't just apply to AI or anything you do. Or, you know, even you're listening to this podcast and I'll say to you, Kotlin is great. No, you evaluate it and figure out for yourself if Kotlin is great or anything else is great. We really, really need the ability to make sure that we're still thinking and analyzing things for ourselves, and especially in this world that is so, you know, polarized and pushing us in all directions, and everyone's got an agenda. And I think it's important to remember that when we're evaluating things and making decisions.
I think that is such a beautiful and perfect ending for the episode. I couldn't have done it better anyway. All right. Thank you very much, Hadi. Thank you for being here. It was a great chat.
Thank you for having me.
And for the audience, you know the spiel. Same place, same next week. And I hope you're listening again. And don't forget to click, subscribe, like, whatever. The typical spiel. Thank you, Hadi. The Cloud Commute podcast is sponsored by SimplyBlock, your own elastic block storage engine for the cloud. Get higher IOPS and low predictable latency while bringing down your total cost of ownership. www.simplyblock.io